Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are again turning towards life, and we're delighted to be here on this Sunday morning, UK time, as we are every Sunday. Justin, it's quite miraculous, continues to be miraculous. And this week we have a source chosen by Justin. If you're new to us, this is how it goes. Justin brings a source 1 week, and I bring a source the next week, so we alternate. And the source normally gets posted on a Friday, unless one of us forgets and then does it scrabbling at midnight or on Saturday morning or something. And then we bring the source in between us on Sunday mornings and see where the conversation leads us. So this is not rehearsed and it's not prepared, but we have been with the source since it got posted on Friday by means of steeping in it and seeing what it brings out in us. So we're going to begin by reading. Everybody, each person reads it, and then we will see where the conversation takes us. And also, you can find the source either on our Facebook post, just as we go live, we post it. We post the source on Friday on Facebook as well. And then once we have put this into the world, you can find it in the show notes of our podcast platforms, any podcast platforms you're on, and also on our website, a very lovely website, turningtowards.life. And there's also an option on there if you wanted to receive this into your inbox, into your email inbox once a week. You can sign up for that and receive us in there, in case it's much easier just to click on the link in an email and you can access it that way. And the source is also in the email, isn't it, Justin, that we send out? So there we are. There's the preamble. And Justin, I don't know if you have anything to intro with. It's lovely to be here.
No, I just want to say hello to you, Lizzie. I'm very, very pleased to be doing this with you. As we've often said, this is the longest single conversation pretty much with anyone that I've been in. But it's also a way of welcoming everyone who's with us in this conversation too. I know that one of the things that happens is that these conversations, they certainly do for me as well. They carry them around with me, as I know many people do. And lots of people are participating in this by being listeners, and also by all the things that happens inside us when we're in a conversation. It also struck me, Lizzie, that the turningtowards.life website's an amazing resource of poems and readings, because as well as the conversations, all 280 something sources are there too to riffle through, and you can search for them and all of those kind of things. So here's this week's source, which is from the very wonderful Seth Godin. And it's called The Sore Spot. The Sore Spot. Everyone has one. It's the part of ourselves we won't look at, acknowledge, or risk disturbing. It's the story or trauma or situation that must be avoided at all costs. People will choose carers, families, careers, families, and opportunities simply to avoid confronting the tiny little voice that is hiding inside. And marketers with low standards will brazenly manipulate us to extract money spent to protect the sore spot. It's almost impossible to make it go away. But if we're brave enough to acknowledge it exists, it's possible to help it take up far less room.
The sore spot. Everyone has one. It's the part of ourselves we won't look at, acknowledge, or risk disturbing. It's the story of trauma or situation that must be avoided at all costs. People will choose careers, families, and opportunities simply to avoid confronting the little tiny voice that is hiding inside. And marketers with low standards will brazenly manipulate us to extract money spent to protect the sore spot. It's almost impossible to make it go away. But if we're brave enough to acknowledge it exists, it's possible to help it take up far less room.
The things I love about this little piece from Seth is how directly it gets into something that's so foundational to what it is to be a person, And it's funny, I didn't, you know, as often, Lizzie, I don't come to this planned with like a whole response. I wanted to wait to see what it was like to hear you read and then see what comes. And I suddenly remembered that for years, I didn't want to watch the video that was made of Davina and my wedding. I didn't want to go anywhere near it. And it wasn't because I wasn't delighted to have thrilled, overjoyed that that happened. And it wasn't because I didn't enjoy celebrating. But I think for me, it gets right into one part of what Seth's writing about. And when Seth says everyone has one, I think my first response is, actually, I have quite a few. It's not just one. And this one was the shame that for such a long time, and of course, I still have sore spots, but this is, I'm talking about one that's really changed for me, was carrying around a constant feeling of shame at myself. And the reason I didn't want to watch the video is I didn't want to see myself. That's what it was. And the best way of dealing with the soreness of this real shame carrying part of me was to try to avoid any situation where I would be confronted with it too much. So not watching my own wedding video was a really good strategy for that. Except, of course, as Seth says, the efforts to avoid confronting these parts of ourselves, meeting them, is the language I would choose, get us into all kinds of difficulty, and also they don't work. So I could avoid watching my own wedding video because that would spare me from feeling the presence of this very pained part of me that was really, turns out, longing to be met and longing to be held and longing to be welcomed. But when I think about how many, the kind of bounds that for a very long time I put around my own life that were much more significant than not watching my, a film of my own wedding, people I wouldn't speak to, things I wouldn't consider doing. One day we were away when our children were very little, and I found myself getting really, really cross with our little ones in a way that I didn't make sense to me at all. And then when I had a chance to sit down and really look at it, I realized that I was getting cross because I was trying to avoid the sore spot in me. That I felt ashamed of something, and it was really nothing to do with them. And that was a total revelation, because I had got on enough to the sense that there was something in me that I was avoiding, and I could think of ways of avoiding it. I got that far. I don't want to watch my own wedding video because I feel ashamed, which itself was quite a big step to see that. But then to start to see that there were other places where my own avoidance strategies were to do something that was very often at odds with something deeper that I held in order to avoid feeling the presence of this something in me. That was a wild realization and explained so much. Like, how come I do this and how come I do that? Oh, I'm trying to avoid something in me. I suppose the thing I found with this part of me was, we've talked lots about this before, Lizzie, about treating parts as if they're beings in their own right, with their own longings and their own wishes, that to for me to have spent a life running from this, getting frightened of confrontation, not wanting to be in the limelight, holding back from things I wanted to say in order to keep this part that carried lots of shame out of view, just shamed and terrified that part even more. So as well as constraining the size of my own life, it actually kept the avoidance of it kept the very situation going for a really, really long time. So I love this idea of Seth's, that the first step is to acknowledge it exists, but then I think the second step is actually there's an opportunity that we each have to turn towards, right? To turn towards these parts of us and begin to wonder what it might be to welcome them and to get to know them and to give up our avoidance strategies. And I'm pleased to say that I quite enjoy watching film of myself these days, including my wedding video. It's like delightful. So that it's, you know, I'm sure like lots of people, I carry lots of other parts that I'm awaiting to be discovered. The work isn't over. But it's quite a relief to know that it's possible to meet these parts of ourselves with care and welcome, and that we don't have to live our whole lives doing this thing that Seth says of choosing, I mean, even really big things, careers, families, opportunities, and being sucked into other people's trying to sell us things. We don't have to be caught in that dynamic our whole lives. It is optional.
Mm. I feel really moved by the tenderness of the sore spot as you're talking. You know, the fact that we're willing to do absolutely anything not to face it, including hurting people we love, or, as you said, doing things that are well against the things we really deeply believe. It feels like there's so much at stake if we were to let the sore spot take up, well, in this invitation from Seth, for it to take up less room means facing it, and in the facing it, it feels like there's a lot at stake. So I'm just appreciating how tender it is to feel that, whether it's shame or goodness knows what other something in us. And I, like you, Justin, this is called the sore spot, but I wonder whether it might be the many sore spots. Everyone has many, kind of thing. I certainly feel like I have many. So as you're talking, I'm like, oh, this one, that one, this one, that one. And also, I'm feeling like the sore spots can be some kind of trauma in me, but they can also be some possibility that I've kind of put away, because in order to face that possibility or to have that be real, I would have to look into other sore spots, if that makes sense. So recently I've been admitting, I can't believe I'm going to say this here, it's hilarious. But I've been admitting to myself that acting is like a calling that I had never attended to. And I've got no idea whether it would come to anything. It's not like I want to be on a stage or something, but the process of learning to act and to embody different characters. And like, I've always had like an affinity with like doing accents and like channeling people. Like, you know, we'd be watching telly when we're little and I'd suddenly like be Pat from EastEnders or something. And everyone would be like, oh my God, you were just like channeling Pat from EastEnders. And it's like, I've got something there. It's like a tiny little something. And this other thing happens slightly tangential, but we were on holiday last year. And there was this game that arose, which is that you had to pretend that you were on a catwalk and demonstrating this like really terrible sun hat that somebody found on the floor, as if it was like the best thing. And it was like on a catwalk. It was just a silly game that we were playing. And it was like coming closer and closer to my turn. I was like, I can't do this. I can't walk in front of other people pretending to lord up this hat as if I'm being something that I'm not. Anyway, I did it because I kind of found some. And of course, it was really enjoyable. Like, it was a really fun experience to embody something that I don't identify with necessarily, kind of thing. And so there's like little experiences like that, which are actually really big experiences for me, where I think I could never do that. And then something happens and I think, oh my gosh, that was amazing. But the thing I had to confront in order to be able to meet the possibility that I wanted to be towards, but I would do everything I could just to not do that. I'll say, oh no, I'm too tired, or I'm you know, all the avoidance strategies I could muster, I feel like I'm like emerging into having a go at some things. So I've been like looking up acting courses, and my niece got an acting book for her 60th birthday, and I like squirreled it away and had a read. And what I can feel about that is that that's a part that's like a little ambition that's been squirreled away somewhere in me, probably because of shame. And I don't know, like feeling unwelcome in that part of myself coming forward in some settings in my childhood and all that kind of thing. I can feel the things that I would have to confront or face into in order for that possibility to ever kind of have a life at all feel excruciating to me. And so with invitations like Seth is making, there's a kind of, oh, okay, so people are inviting each other into these things. We can let the whispers be a little bit stronger, because it is possible to be brave enough to acknowledge that this possibility exists and the associated things exist, and that I can let them in and not be so petrified of them, not be so debilitated, not be so ruled by their looming presence that hasn't been faced into letting that loomingness kind of put me off them. So I'm feeling like what Seth is inviting us into, and as you said, Justin, we've been talking about parts a lot, like different parts of ourselves, this possibility of being able to turn towards what's getting in the way, but also turn towards this bigger possibility that might be there. It feels like a very risky, but very interesting invitation. Like, in even speaking the words is helpful. Even having some language rather than just me and this, having this secret that I really like to do an acting course. It's like, and then I kind of said it to somebody the other day for the first time. I was like, and I've just said it here. It's so ridiculous. But it's good. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, I'm just saying it's not that big a thing. When I say it, I'm like, oh, it's not that big a thing. It's just like going to a course and doing something. So anyway, I feel very grateful for the relationships and the language that's possible, that we can talk about something and then begin to feel something and then see what it is and explore it. And of course, goodness knows what's in there as well. So I think it's quite intrepid work, because I think there probably is some trauma in there for me. Like, I showed up and someone was horrified at some performance I did or something, and told me to get back in my box because it was ridiculous and I was too loud and it was inappropriate and the timing was wrong. And, you know, I've got all of those things in my basket of wounds and shames. So I feel like there's some kind of excavation to be doing with it. And I really want to do it. Because what if I just leave this life without having pursued a thing? Like, even saying that now, I'm like, oh God, yeah. If I just went quietly and never felt the feeling of doing the thing that I felt pulled towards, that would be really sad.
I'm just, how fabulous that you've just made this public declaration.
I'm an idiot.
It's going to go out to thousands of people. And they're all going to tell someone else they know. And before long, everyone in the world's going to be talking about you and acting. It. And I'm remembering sitting in a car with you, long time, 8 or 9 years ago, and bringing on all the different voices you could imagine, which was quite fantastic, amazing range of accents. And so it's very exciting to hear you say that. And it's making me think about how, if we think about these sore spots as little ones inside us who are in pain in some way, and then all of the other parts of ourselves that will mobilize to protect us, to protect the little one and to protect us from the feeling of the little, if we think about it that way, rather than as something to be pushed away. Anyone who's been with a little one will know he push a little one away, that rightly, any of us who gets pushed away when we're longing for something, it just intensifies our longing and our pain. So often the sort of protective strategy that we've got is the one that keeps the very thing going. And how the sort of, I was thinking when you were talking about acting, how there's the sore ones in us, and then there's the, or the protective ones in us, and the protective ones in us are surely doing the best they can, given the information they've got, given their understanding of the world. But one of the consequences of them is that we will sometimes organize our lives to keep us away from what we most long for, what would be most life-giving, or what is most called for, because of our attempts to keep the sore one out of view, or so it doesn't affect us, or so we don't feel it.
Mm.
So I'm so pleased that something in you is shifting, and it's going to give you the opportunity to who knows what with acting, which is clearly, just from being knowing you for years, it's clearly something very close to the surface, something really important that's waiting to be attended to. And it was so moving to hear you say, while you've got time to do this, whilst you're alive, to do this. And that's the thing that really got me, is how we'll organize, this is the point that Seth's making, when we organize a life around not feeling our sore spots, we could live a whole life, really a whole life, not acting on things that really matter, not bringing ourselves close to what matters in us and what matters in the world to us, or what would be life-giving, or what would be joyful, or what would be of service to other people. And we also make ourselves vulnerable to the, I suppose, Seth's point about marketers with low standards is partly about marketers, which is one of the things that he writes a lot about, but it's also partly about how we'll deflect instead of, you know, to buy a product or a service or something that, that doesn't suit us, but somehow covers up our soreness, is to participate in, and there's a whole economy that's built around that, is really to stay away from ourselves. And it might sound like working with this is a means descending into the deep, dark depths of things, but it's also true from hearing, and reminded by hearing you speak about acting, that meeting the sore ones in us and treating them with some care, and almost certainly doing that in conversation with other people and not trying to do it on our own, is also a way of getting in contact with that which is most alive in us, the, like you were saying, the parts of you that really, really want to be bringing themselves to the world, but somehow something happened earlier on that taught your, you know, taught your inner system to keep that well hidden away, and it reminds you of the pain of it. So it's a way into our own aliveness to meet our sore spots, and to not keep on pretending that they're not there.
That's so interesting. The thing that just came up is, again, I'm like, oh my gosh, saying this to lots of people, but I remember being in the shower once and I was singing. You know, me and my brother and sister are very close in age. So it's just a very rambunctious situation. And I must have been in my teens or whatever. And I remember my brother saying, Lizzie, I know it sounds good to you when you're singing in the shower, but it sounds just as terrible when, you know, from out here as it would do if I was just listening to you without you being in the shower, kind of thing. I can't remember exactly the words he used anyway. And I remember thinking, you know, when you're in the shower as well, you kind of think you're on your own. He's just going for it, kind of thing. And that's one of the sore spots for me. And was like, oh my gosh, I'm way more terrible than I think I am. I just better shut up. You know, I better not do this anymore. And for my brother, he probably won't even remember having said it. You know, and I'm sure it was just a kind of moment of annoyance that I was in the shower and he probably wanted to be there, whatever. But I remember just thinking, oh, I've got this all wrong. Like, I need to be quiet and I need to not inflict myself and my singing voice on anybody ever again. And you know, there's like prime moments. It's like a perfect setup. And I feel like those things are really, for me, they're the things that kind of come around again. Like, I think about that quite a lot. I don't really talk about it much, but I think about it quite a lot. Like, oh yeah, that moment where I kind of learned that that wasn't what I should be doing. And it's really sore. You know I stood there kind of, you know, having the water wash over me and not really doing anything that you normally do in a shower for a few minutes because I was so crestfallen, like really hurt. And then that part of me, that ashamed part of me, didn't really get much airtime since then. You know, and there's 100,000 things like that happened to me when I was little, and some of them have been brought into a therapeutic space and some of them haven't. And it's an ongoing, like you said, like it's all a lifetime's work, isn't it? But it's so, you know, sometimes these things, and there's plenty of other bits of like really much more difficult trauma in my life, but like that's as big as any of them. You know, it doesn't, like the order of things in some way doesn't matter so much as the preciousness of the thing that was being unseen or pushed away or something. So I'm really feeling the preciousness of our showing up and how it can be crushed so easily. And then this whole thing about choosing careers and families and opportunities to avoid things is so completely understandable. Like, I can just feel it in my example of being in the shower and my brother shouting out. It's like, I'd be happy just to put that away forever. Thank you very much. Like, that was really hard. So it takes courage and it takes softness and it takes kindness and warmth and safety just to say, we can have anything here, you know, it's okay. And so I feel really committed to that for myself and for other people too, that we can be that for one another, where we can bring the tenderest thing and kind of be there and think, oh God, is Justin going to run away? Is he just going to say the same thing? Oh no, he's not saying that. It's okay. I think I can carry on. You know, I want to be that. I want you to be that for me, and I want to be that for you, that we can kind of wince at the possibility of having the conversation and then go, oh no, his eyes are still wide open. He hasn't run off. I think this might be all right to have this conversation.
It's such a lovely thing to be reminded that every day, many of us have bigger traumas in our lives, you know, things that really get us stuck in our tracks whenever we're anywhere near them, freeze our bodies and all of that. And that many of the smaller, those apparently smaller moments, that there wasn't somebody being abusive or violent or something like that. It was just sort of the ordinary everyday interactions between people that happen, particularly when we're younger, that have a sore spot get made. I think that's what you were describing about singing in the shower, as a sore spot, something in you that wanted to sing, got not met, got criticized, maybe completely unintentionally in a way. And then a sore spot got born, and all the protective mechanisms around the sore spot that then would hold you back from singing. And you and I have talked, like, for me, dancing was one of the things, an early experience with dancing wildly created exactly one of these shame sore spots. And it reminded me that for me, the structure of these has sort of become so self-evident. I never knew that my terror of dancing came from one of these structures, and it just seemed obvious to me that when I was dancing, everyone was watching me and everyone was demanding that I dance, and it sort of created this whole thing in me and this whole relationship with the world around dancing. One of the great liberations of being able to just to dance again was being able to bring how embarrassed I was to some people who I loved and say, excuse me, I'm really, really, really frightened of dancing, and here's why. And instead of, like you said, instead of those people who loved me keeping on doing the same thing and joining in with my shame or trying to make the sore spot go away, they were curious about me. Tell me more. I really want them. They didn't go, let's push you onto the dance floor. And they didn't go, well, you should never dance. What they did was welcome the soreness as well as the longing that was behind the soreness. And I think that's the thing. It's the move to do for ourselves, but it's really also the thing we can be for one another in this is, can we smile with a look of appreciation and recognition when somebody brings us their sore spot, and not join in trying to make it go away and not make it into a giant drama? Because in the sense, this is the most ordinary everyday of things. We're filled with sore places. We're filled with something behind all of the sore places that longs to be brought forward. And what all of it is longing for is not to be pushed away and not to be stamped on and not to be made into a monster, but is to be welcomed with a truthful and loving heart and some curiosity. And that's the place that the doorway into maybe this, and softness, and maybe into this softening. And it has been wonderful to learn how to dance again and to feel safe to do so. And I still have the echoes of sore spots in me. Those parts are still a little bit like, is this really possible? And every time I get met by somebody else who's willing just to be with me in that and not push and not avoid, but to be a genuine welcome, it helps to soften up the soreness a little bit more.
It's so good, this feeling that we can soften these sore bits. Because it's also like a kind of incrementalness that feels really kind. As you're speaking, I can feel like, oh no, I've got to kind of find my sore spots and face them all, and they have to be given more space immediately. And it's like I can find that part of me that's a bit like treating myself a bit linearly, you know, like, oh, there's one, deal with that one or something. But then when you were saying about people being around you who are soft and curious, and it's not like anything has to kind of happen, it can just be like this ongoing inquiry and somebody being curious and there being language and wondering and holding it, and it doesn't feel like a project or something. It's just an unfolding way that we can be with one another. It's really beautiful.
You know, what a great place to end, Lizzie, on this reminder of how we can be with one another that makes it possible for us to work with this over time.
Yeah.
So this whole project of us talking with one another and making it available to the world, including your declaration of your wish to act, seems to me a project also in undoing our own sore spots, so that other things can come through. And it's a real privilege to get to do that together. And it's a privilege for all of you who are with us in the many, many ways that you're with us. It's a privilege for us that you get to accompany us on that. And I know it's my hope and that this conversation meets the sore spots in the many, many people who are listening. So you're very welcome to be with us, everyone. And you're very welcome to be in contact with us. You can email us. You could email Lizzie or Justin or just hello@turningtowards.life, and we would be so glad to hear from you. And all being well, we'll be back again this time next week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye, everyone.